Hi, friends. Welcome back to another episode of Dietitians Uncorked. I have such a fun guest to share with you, a wonderful conversation with Kim Kramer. She is a registered dietitian and a certified diabetes care and education specialist and the owner of Health Right Consulting. We have a fun conversation coming at you live right now. Kim, it is so wonderful to have you here. I'm so excited. We have a lot to talk about today. You have an experience with lots of different people in the field of nutrition. But before we get into that, I want to talk wine because I feel like we have to get into that.
Sort of like my favorite topics, wine and nutrition.
Right? We're all peas in the pod here.
Exactly. Kim, tell everyone how many vineyards or wineries you've been to.
Okay, so I have been to 116 different wineries. I have visited them, you know, some of them numerous times, but I can only count them on my list once.
Damn.
If I've been there multiple times. So
116
different ones.
Mm-hmm. Dang. Okay, so walk us through your love affair with wine, because Kelly and I absolutely love it, but we feel sometimes we're like, don't want to get too much into it in the podcast. But if we have a fellow wino, I feel like we got to go there.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I started waitressing at an Italian restaurant when I was 18 years old, and people would ask me for recommendations on, you know, what wine should they pair with their food. And I, you know, I was 18 years old. I did not know that.
Yeah.
So I started learning about the different wines, how they pair. And then I got really interested in all the different kind of varieties out there. You know, you go to different parts of the country and they grow completely different grapes, you know,
yeah,
depending on what grows well there. And that's just so fascinating to me, and learning about, you know, the art of making wine. And
yeah,
you know, I've been on a lot of wine tours, you know, listen to wine podcasts. I just been in Napa a couple times. I've been soaking it all in.
That's amazing. That is amazing. I think Kelly and I are both like red wine people more so than white or rosé. How about you? What do you feel like it's like, or does it vary? I guess it depends, you know?
It does. I do feel like it depends. I try to pair it with what I'm eating. So
okay.
I do that quite a bit. I feel like in the summer, I drink more of the whites and rosés than I do in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's like a brunch or something like that, you know, I feel like I'll go with the white rosés then as well. So,
yeah, I do the same. Definitely more red in the winter, white and rosé in the summer. I'm curious, what do you have? So you've been to a shit ton of wineries. Can you even say, like, do you have a favorite one? Do you have a favorite region?
Ooh, good question.
Well, of course, you know, Napa is absolutely lovely. That, you know, that is one of my favorites. I do love Santa Ynez. It's about like an hour and 45 minutes north of LA. And everything there is, you know, spread out quite a bit. It's not as condensed as Napa is. Everything's laid back. You know, the wine is great. They have some, you know, wonderful Pinot Noirs around that region. And yeah, I just really like that area. I've really taken to it. About five different occasions I've been out there just to that area specifically to.
That's amazing.
Wine. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to put that on my bucket list for sure.
Absolutely. If you're ever in the LA area, yeah, it is definitely worth the ride up there.
I've been to Sonoma, which, if my memory serves, that's close to
Napa-ish.
Yes. But I've not been. Can you say it again? Santa
Ynez? Yeah.
Santa Ynez.
Okay. Yeah, it's about 45 minutes north of Santa Barbara.
Well, I'm super jealous and now need to plan a wine trip.
So. Absolutely.
I know. We joked about drinking wine at, like, we're recording currently in the morning for all of our friends tuning in. But we take wine so seriously. We were joking about potentially just doing it, you know? But I think it's not socially acceptable to do that.
More the coffee. Coffee right, now, right. Wine later.
Yeah. Okay, so should we switch gears? Are we kind of ready to talk nutrition?
I suppose. We can return to this another day because I want to pick your brain more.
Absolutely.
Yes. So, Kim, you have worked with a variety of different populations in different states of life, in like just generally usually when you pick a path in nutrition, people tend to niche down, you know, they tend to kind of work with one specific group, but that has not really been your experience. Is that fair to say?
Yes. You know, I've been working in like general wellness for, gosh, the past 17 years. It's been a long time. Wow. So yes. And I do have a specialty in, as a diabetes, educator. So that's in the more recent years, but I still do see, you know, anyone, you know, the general population, whether it be, you know, bariatric patients, GI patients, general weight loss, I see peds, you know, you name it. And I see those patients. Yeah.
So we kind of thought you'd be the perfect guest to just talk about, common misconceptions about nutrition that sort of seem to apply across the board, or maybe that you've identified that you just sort of run across often.
I do. I get a lot of questions that people will ask. I even have a presentation that I do out in the community. It's just general questions, you know, about nutrition, because I know that I will get that question every time. At the end of the talk,
Sure.
So I would say one of the things that I do find, you know, people have a general misconception about is like the overall calories. So let's say I give someone, the amount of calories that they should have in a day. It's not just about eating that amount of calories. You know, there is an art form. So just like making wine, see how we're putting this all together here? So, you know, that's something that, let's say we give someone 1500 calories, you know, that they should be eating that. It's not just, hey, I can go eat a meal at a fast food restaurant, eat 1500 calories, starve the rest of the day, and then I'm going to be able to lose weight that way, you know? So I feel like a lot of people, you know, can't just know about the calories. They need to know the background on it and, you know, how they should be eating those calories, what they should need to eat with those calories. And that's when it's like all of us that come into play, the dietitians, right?
Totally. Do you find that Kelly and I talk about this often, that there's just so many conflicting answers about nutrition online? That just, you know, like, should I be eating gluten-free? And then you Google that, and then the answer that Google might spit out might be yes, and then the next time you Google it might be no. Do you find that there are things like that that often come up with your
clients? Absolutely. Absolutely. I find, you know, people will tell me things that are just very, very strange, you know, that I've never even heard of before. I was like, I'm pretty sure that's not the case. I know that comes up a lot of times with people who are diabetic, that they will say, oh, well, my friend's diabetic, and they told me that you absolutely cannot eat potatoes. But, you know, each person is so different. So with one person, yes, it might spike up their blood sugars a lot, but someone else, you know, it doesn't, and it's perfectly fine to have potatoes. One person might be on insulin where they're getting a little extra help. Another person might not be. So every person's unique. And, you know, it's not that any food is like completely off the table.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that.
That's what's so tricky about people Googling information like that, especially some of the clients you're working with when they have a specific medical condition, or I know you mentioned bariatric patients a while back, like those could definitely be situations where you're giving like a specific, you know, calorie limit and like really specific individualized guidelines. And so of course, if someone Googles that, it's going to be a shit show. Right.
Yeah.
And that's where there's so much conflicting information. And I totally get why people can come to us and then you're just another, you know, person, right? Yes, you have credentials and you have a lot of experience, but it's still just like another, you know, another piece of information thrown in the pot. And I feel like people really struggle to like navigate all of that, which is why it does help so much to have like a trusted professional that you can, you know, work with over time and really develop that relationship so that that person feels comfortable with you, you know, and they can take what you say and, you know, feel confident that you're giving them the best advice for their specific situation, which is something that Google, you know, can't quite do.
Absolutely. Yet. You definitely are right with that, Kelly, for sure.
Let's move. We want to pick your brain about another topic. So you've worked with a variety of age ranges in terms of clients and patients. And you know, Kat and I as well, we work with a variety of age brackets, and we've had some people interested in, you know, what are nutrition specific things that I should think about, considerations for certain age brackets. So like 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, etc. Obviously you've worked with peds, and don't feel like you need to speak to like each age range, but we're curious any, you know, advice you have for our listeners or anything that you find would be helpful when people are thinking about age-related nutrition issues?
Well, I do think that I see this quite a bit, especially with women, you know, trying to lose weight, that the sodium content of foods really can make a difference in like fluid fluctuations, preventing them from losing weight. I've just, you know, seen it in all my experience, of teaching weight loss classes, you know, doing one-on-one, consultations. And, you know, if we're giving someone a set amount of calories that they should follow and they're doing that, but their sodium is way too high, if they're eating a lot of the processed foods and, you know, maybe doing the microwavable meals for lunch every day, eating meals out, even though calorie wise it's perfect, you know, but the sodium content is so high, I just find that they're not maybe losing the weight that they want to, they're not getting to the goals that they want to. So that is something that I see quite a bit, that I encourage people to really watch the sodium content of their food, you know, not just those overall calories. That's part of it being an art form.
Right.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. With peds, and this is a very specific question to that patient population, but we have some listeners who are in the bracket of, you know, being mothers of little ones. And we've talked about, especially kids, the ages where they're having to maybe go to school, like moving away from like being infants, but just, you know, school range. There's a lot of questions that I think come up around calcium in that specific patient population. Have you noticed that trend with your peds clients, or like how to get these kids to get enough calcium, especially with, and I'm saying this with the context of, there's a lot of big moves to have less dairy consumption in general, more plant-based dairy products, or substitutions, I guess. Do you find that? Is that something you talk about a lot?
We'll talk about it a little bit. I feel like, you know, if the kiddos can get, you know, 3 servings of dairy in their day, you know, that's a great goal, a great thing to be able to do. I know some kiddos really won't drink, you know, the white milk. So that's like one of the hard things. Sure. You know, especially in school, because there are those options of the chocolate milk or the white milk. You know, it is important to get that calcium in. So even if a child is not willing at all to have you know, white milk, and they're going to drink it if it's chocolate milk. Something like that is, you know, considered A-okay in my book.
Sure.
But yeah, as long as you had mentioned with the plant-based, as long as all of those are fortified with calcium and vitamin D, that's the big thing, because there's a lot of like, almond drink or soy drink out there that's not an actual like milk substitute.
Yeah. We have a group program that we just launched recently, which we're really excited. But part of that, we talk about calcium and vitamin D as being something, and I think this applies for peds, and I wanted to ask you about peds since you're somebody who works with that patient population, but it also applies to people, particularly women, who are hitting that menopause sort of stage in life. And what you just said, I think it's so important that we have to understand how to read a label, how to know that what is fortified with both of these things, calcium and vitamin D, even if you're choosing a different source of, let's say, milk, even if it's based in like plant products rather than cow's milk, I think it's important to make sure that you're getting the calcium.
Absolutely. And even, they have those alternatives the soy yogurt or almond yogurt. I mean, there's so many great things for people that are lactose intolerant.
Coconut.
You know, but just trying to make sure that has, you know, everything fortified in there as well.
So it's, you know, what we've talked about so far, all these different, you know, age-related considerations. I feel like at the end of the day, it's coming back to providing that individualized perspective, right? So your example about sodium content with, you know, women who might be trying to lose weight or are on that weight loss journey, that's, you know, something that people might not realize could affect their weight. But also, of course, it's affecting a lot of other components of health, right? Heart health and blood pressure and all of that. And I think sometimes people who are on a health journey can zoom in on certain, you know, factors in terms of nutrition. And so it really helps to have that professional perspective so that they can really take in like the broad picture, right? Not just calories, but also sodium, you know, and calcium and vitamin D. And what is my, you know, budget like, right? Sure, there are plant-based sources of calcium, but dairy is also a great source. So like taking all that into consideration, as you said, art form, right? Just kind of like merging all of that together.
Absolutely. Yep.
Switching gears a little bit. Kelly and I feel really strongly about helping people have maybe a strategy to create, you know, meal patterns or eating patterns that help prevent or manage chronic illness. I think that's a big area where you kind of come in and help, even as a consultant or just a general one-on-one practitioner. What would you say, and you probably have, we work with more, I think our age bracket is a little less diverse than yours, but what would you say are practical tools you cover or you kind of go through to help people prevent and manage chronic illness? And I know this is a big chronic illness. It dives into lots of different things, but maybe some things that apply to more than just one chronic illness. Or,
well, I think in general, just people getting a sense of like what exactly they're eating, you know, logging it, like writing it down. That's very helpful. Not that they're going to do this every single day for the rest of their lives. That is not practical. But even if it's for a short amount of time, you know, there's so many great online apps that are out there that you're just scanning, you know, barcodes, and then that'll show up. You can get everything in there really quickly, have all your foods that you eat on a normal basis. I think all of that's great. And then being accountable to somebody. So, you know, such as a dietitian like all of us. So just having that, and that can really help, because, you know, we're looking at not only the calories, we're looking at the sodium content. We're looking at perhaps the carbs if they're diabetic. you know, we're looking at the cholesterol, we're looking at everything. We're looking at that big picture. And we can really see that if people are, you know, writing everything down, and then it makes everyone like aware of what they're doing too. So I might think that I ate, you know, 1800 calories, but wow, that was, you know, 2500 or 2600 calories. You know, you just, we don't realize it if we're not writing that down and looking it up, and, you know, just that overall awareness. I think that's huge.
Tell me, okay, Kim, you taught me this, that fiber is your friend. It stuck with me.
I love it.
Until now, as I was an intern. for those tuning in, Kim was a preceptor. She sort of provided much needed guidance during my internship years as a dietitian, trying to become a dietitian. And I heard Kim say, fiber is your friend. And that just sort of stuck with me. That's a huge component of what Kelly and I focus on when we're doing one-on-one counseling. We have a whole thing about fiber. We just did an episode about top 10 questions about fiber. I mean, we just love it. But I want to get your two cents as to what fiber means to you as a dietitian, and why would you say that fiber is your friend?
Don't even get me started. I love it. I might yes. come up with, you came up with top 10. I might come up with top 20 reasons why I love fiber. I have a shirt that says fiber is your friend with pieces. It's a brown shirt with pieces of wheat coming out of it.
Whatever. I've seen this shirt. Oh, man. It's great. It's a fantastic shirt.
So, yeah, I think that's the reason why I love it so much, is because it can prevent against a lot of different diseases, or can aid, you know, if people have certain types of diseases. For instance, someone has high cholesterol, that fiber is going to attach onto the LDL cholesterol, help take it out of the body. So there's that. If someone has diabetes, the fiber is going to help prevent spiking the glucose too high, and can help prolong digestion with that. Let's say someone has some, you know, GI issues, perhaps some diverticulosis, which is very common. The fiber can help prevent pockets of food getting caught in the intestines. So that's a good, like a long-term, one. And if people are, you know, have any struggles with constipation, just adding that fiber can really help, help their GI systems. And last but not least, the weight loss. So, you know, it gives us that satiety, that fullness feeling. And so that's something that, you know, it can help give us that fullness feeling, so that we're not, we're kind of teasing our bodies into eating a little bit less than we actually are, and oh so healthy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there's my plug. I love it. Fiber's your friend. I love it. You still remember that. It's going to be on my, I always joke around, it's going to be on my gravestone when I die. Fiber's your friend, Kim Craver.
I feel like I can confidently say that the vast majority of clients, patients, participants, like all the types of people I've worked with throughout my career so far, are under eating fiber. And often people, you know, really don't realize that, nor do they realize all the connections between fiber and various health conditions. So if you do one thing, you know, if you take away one thing from, you know, this episode, I think that's such an important point, because nutrition, of course, is not just about, you know, tracking all your food or counting calories or anything like that. Sure, those are tools that we can use, but there are also other things that I think sometimes people just don't realize until, you know, they do start working with a dietitian who has that broader perspective. And paying attention to something like fiber serves you well forever, you know, for your entire life, like really helps to protect your body and prevent chronic illness and manage chronic illness. So I am on board with fiber as your friend. I love that.
And then, yeah, Kelly, that's one of the things too, that, like, you know, I didn't grow up with whole wheat pasta. There was no whole wheat pasta, you know, when I was growing up. There was, you know, nobody really had whole wheat bread. Nobody, you know, the health benefits weren't out there, you know, like they are now. Yeah, the right. options weren't out there. So nobody really grew up with this. So trying to get people who are, you know, in their 60s and 70s to start eating fiber yes. when, you know, none of these products were available when they were growing up, they haven't eaten it their entire lives. Like that's, it is challenging.
Yeah. Yes. That's a really good point.
Yeah. And also, I mean, fiber is one of those things that no matter what stage in life you are in, this applies to you. I mean, we can talk about people with diabetes and the benefits, or people with GI issues, cancer, whatever area we want to go into, but fiber is something that is applicable and beneficial for literally everyone. And so being able to say that and sort of guide people to increase their fiber intake slowly, yes. slowly.
with water.
With lots of water. It is such a game changer because, like you just said, a lot of people didn't grow up knowing these benefits. Some people don't even know how to find the best products or what small changes they can make to increase their fiber. So it's fantastic to have such a fiber fan base here in a group of dietitians. Kim, we ask this to most of our guests that we've been able to interview. This doesn't have to be anything that you cooked or it can be something that you cooked or something that you tried at a restaurant, but we know RDs are generally are big foodies. Like we appreciate good food. And so we were wondering in the past 6 months to a year, something that you ate that like blew your mind, that you were like, this was like my best. And it could be like Ooh. A meal, a dessert. It could even be a wine, since we're just like really into the wine situation. Wow. Anything that comes
I
up.
Mean, there's so many. How do I pick one?
I know.
How do I pick one? I like really strive to I know, eat I know. Delicious food as, you know.
It's of like course.
People
of course.
Will ask, hey, why did you become a dietitian? Because I love food.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. That's the best answer to that question.
I will say I make this delicious, it's like a scallop and asparagus risotto. And I make it in the Instapot. And Stop. It is, so I'm Get not sitting out. There stirring for 50 minutes like the normal risotto. You do a little sauteing in the Instapot. You cook it for 4 minutes in the Instapot. It comes out so delicious. I have not ordered risotto in a restaurant ever since because it is not as good as mine.
Oh my God.
Wow.
You got to send some sort of recipe. Oh, I mean, people are going to want to know. They're going to want to know.
And then I just sit there with a nice, like a viognier alongside of yes. it. Either like a Viognier, perhaps a Riesling, and just, yep, that's my jam.
Love life. Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Oh, my God. And I love risotto. I just don't make it mm-hmm. very often because I don't want to sit there and stir it. But you don't yeah. have to do that. It's
labor
right.
intensive.
Yeah,
in yep, the Instapot. Exactly. It's 4 minutes, and it tastes, you know, it's so delicious.
That's amazing.
Awesome recipe.
Mm-hmm. yeah. Well, Kim, thank you so much for being on our podcast. Thanks for the time and for navigating all the tech stuff. We feel very honored to have your perspective, especially because you work with